So we are 4 to 6 times higher grade than your typical iron and clay deposit, which makes us so much more economic. What's also very important is because the rare earths sit in the waste residue stockpile, it's above the ground, you've got no mining risk, you've got no geological risk, it's all there.
Good afternoon. We got George Bennett, CEO of Ringler Rare Earths. How are you, my friend?
I'm very good and pleasure to be on your show.
Yeah. Well, tell us about you and maybe just as importantly, tell us about your company, what you guys got going on and what you guys stand for.
So we basically are looking to be a strategic supplier of an ethical supplier of rare earth elements, which are required for what's known as permanent magnets. They go into all modern technology for the West. You know, we are focused towards the West, and that means that we want to be part of the independent supply chain for rare earth elements that are being developed, as I said, outside of China.
And you are primarily in Africa, Brazil, you got East Africa, South Africa, is that correct?
Well, we have a small mine in Burundi, which is currently on care and maintenance. We have a major project in South Africa, which we're developing, which the U.S. government is very familiar with. We have a $50 million commitment by the DFC, that's the Development Finance Corporation out of Washington, to invest $50 million in project equity into the project in South Africa known as Phelabolwa. And we have a MOU signed to develop the rare earths, similar to what we have in South Africa with Mosaic in Spain. That project's called Uberaba, where it's situated, in Brazil, not Spain. And that's the Uberaba project in Brazil. And we have, you know, we have our MOU signed with OCP in Morocco to look at extracting rare earths out of their resources there. And I'll talk about those resources a bit later. And similar, we have been approached by the Saudi Arabians to partner with them as being their technology partner in potentially extracting rare earths from their sources in Saudi Arabia. So we have a significant footprint, but the two key flagship projects are Phelabolwa in South Africa, and coming up very quickly behind that is the Uberaba project in Brazil.
So South Africa and Brazil, if you can kind of zoom in a little bit on those two flagship projects, if you can tell us about the jurisdiction and how friendly it is, and where are you guys in terms of the stage of mining exploration?
Okay, so where Rainbow is unique is that we regard it as the highest margin rare earth business and development in the world today. The reason being, we're extracting the rare earths not out of a hard rock mine or an iron and clay deposit, but we're extracting the rare earths out of a waste residue called phosphogypsum. Now, phosphogypsum is created through the production of phosphoric acid used in the fertilizer business, which is why we have a JV with Mosaic, one of the biggest fertilizer producers in the world. What happened in South Africa, and it's the same thing that takes place in Brazil, is that for 60 odd years, you have a hard rock phosphate mine mining phosphate rock. There are rare earths in that phosphate rock, but not in economic quantities. But what you do with that hard rock phosphate is you crush it and you mill it. And through a flotation process, you produce what's known as a phosphate concentrate, slurry. That slurry is then fed to phosphoric acid plants. This phosphoric acid plant was owned by Sasol, a big global chemical giant in South Africa. And what Sasol did for, as I say, 60 odd years was you add sulfuric acid and you add heat to this phosphate slurry, which produces phosphoric acid. When you produce phosphoric acid, it creates a waste residue called phosphogypsum. The rare earths that were in the hard rock are now concentrated through this slurry process, and then the ports through the phosphoric acid production in the phosphogypsum onto the stacks. So now we have the rare earths sitting in these phosphogypsum stacks that are sitting at economic grade, and that grade is running at 0.44% total rare earth oxides, TREO, as known in the rare earth space. What's significant about that is that if you compare that to an Ionic A deposit, which is mined in Myanmar, and they're mining them in China, and they're mining one in South America at the moment, in Brazil as well. But the Ionic A deposits are very, very low mining costs. So you have almost no mining costs. But the grade of an Ionic A deposit is 0.04 to 0.08% generally. So we are 4 to 6 times higher grade than your typical Ionic A deposit, which makes us so much more economic. What's also very important is because the rare earths sit in the waste residue stockpile, it's above the ground, you've got no mining risk, you've got no geological risk, it's all there. And when you mine a rare earth mineral deposit, the first stage of your mining is you produce what's known as a mixed rare earth concentrate. Now, the analogy I can give you and your audience is that you've heard about platinum mines, but platinum mines aren't platinum mines per se. When you mine a platinum deposit, you produce what's known as a PGM group, platinum group metals. And in that concentrate that you mine as a platinum miner, you have platinum, you have rhodium, you have palladium, you have iridium, you have a bit of gold, sometimes a bit of copper, a bit of chromite, and so forth. So you have maybe 6 or 7 elements. It's called a platinum mine because platinum is your dominant metal in that basket, so circa 50-odd%. The rest of those elements make up the balance of your basket. So everyone just says it's a platinum mine, but they refer to it as producing platinum group metals in that concentrate. In a rare earth deposit, you mine 17 elements that all have different properties, and those 17 elements you mine initially as a rare earth concentrate. Then your next stage of beneficiation is to turn that concentrate into what they call a mixed rare earth carbonate or mixed rare earth oxide. And once you've got it in that form, you then send it further downstream to separate into the individual elements. And those individual elements all have different properties. And the whole world right now is chasing 4 of those elements, be what they're known, what are known as permanent magnet rare earths: neodymium, praseodymium, dysprosium, and terbium. Do you have any questions at this stage?
NB, RRDY, and TB?
Yeah, so your ND, PR, DY, and TB, which is your neodymium, praseodymium, dysprosium, and terbium. The 4 key rare earth elements that go into permanent magnets, which are very strategic right now. And that makes up 95% of the value of the rare earth basket that Philip Bohr has. So it's not worth us chasing the balance for 5% because there's no value in it. So in 4 elements, we get 95% of our value. And those 4 elements are strategic for, as I say, permanent magnets. And they go into all sorts of modern technology. Your iPhone or your cell phone vibrates with permanent magnets. And then your AirPods work with permanent magnets, your Bose speakers, your wind turbines, your plug-in hybrids, and your electric vehicles. Even a normal ICE vehicle, that's internal combustion engine vehicle, has permanent magnets because they go into the motors that make your seats go up, move around, and make your windows go up and down. Those tiny motors have permanent magnets on them. So to a lesser extent than an EV or plug-in hybrid, but still, they require permanent magnets. And all your handheld electronics, your drones, your wind turbines, all require permanent magnets and very, very strategic for defense. As you know, the whole thing about the bipartisan movement in the US government to create a strategic supply chain outside of China, one of the big motivating factors is, apart from supporting your industry in America and the West, it's your defense, because an F-35 fighter jet has got 420 kilograms of rare earths per jet. Your California class submarine's got something like 20 to 25 tons of rare earths. Your Abrams tank has got 3 to 5 tons of rare earths, and so forth. So very great. Your heat seeking missiles, your missile guidance systems need rare earths, especially dysprosium and terbium. So these key rare earth elements are very strategic for defense and for general, you know, your broader economy in the West and the US. Any questions on that?
Well, I think I knew about the defense, and the energy, the turbines. It looks like pretty much everything we use. And the semiconductors as well?
I don't think so, no. But certainly most aspects of one technology. And very important, there are two new frontiers of massive demand between now and 2044, permanent magnets, and therefore rare earths, is your humanoid robotics and eVTOL, electrical, vertical, and takeoff landing vehicles. Basically, so, air taxis.
You're going to accelerate us being taken over by Skynet, is what you're telling me.
Well, Tesla forecast that there will be 10 billion humanoid robots on the planet by 2040.
Wow.
10 billion. So even if Tesla are crazy over-optimistic and they're 2 billion robots, humanoid robots, that's still four times the forecast number of electric vehicles on the planet. And a humanoid robot takes 5 to 15 kilograms of permanent magnet motors compared to 3 to 4 kilograms in the EV or plug-in hybrid. So, you know, even if it's not 10 billion, they're just 2 billion humanoid robots, it's creating massive, massive demand for rare earths and these permanent magnets that are going to these robots. And if you look at electrical, vertical, and takeoff landing vehicles, and they'll be piloted right now, as you're aware. There's four licenses being issued in the US commercially, two at JFK, one at O'Hare, one at NAX, and they're also trialing these commercially in Dubai. But essentially, if you take a taxi from NAX to San Diego, talk an hour, hour and a half in traffic. In these vertical taxis, you're talking 8 minutes.
Wow.
For the same price as an Uber Black. So you can see why there's real demand going to be for this mode of transport, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very real because they're trialing them commercially as we speak. This is not a pie in the sky. It's very real.
As needed as rare earths are, they're, you know, right now, gold is hot. Why is rare earth not on more people's radar? And when do you see that changing? And why would you say rare earth is a good play with you guys?
Well, first of all, the amount of permanent magnets over the last 5 years has doubled. So that's very good. Compound growth in the market, and we forecast to double to now 2030 again. Between 2030 and 2040, I think the demand will explode even more with the robots and air taxis, so eVTOLs. So the macro is very good, apart from wind turbines, EVs, plug-in hybrids, and all those other uses for permanent magnets, as I said. So I'm a very firm believer in the macro. The problem is that 30 years ago, the Chinese premier made a statement that the Middle East has oil, China has rare earths. And they decided to focus on dominating the supply chain all the way down from primary production to downstream beneficiation. So 95% of all the permanent magnets currently are made in China. And they control about 80% of primary production. That's circa 60% within China and about 20% in Myanmar, and they control the Myanmar primary production of rare earths. So what's happened is for the last few years, there's been massive subsidy by the Chinese government, you know, to keep rare earth pricing down, to prevent other projects being brought on stream in the West so they can lose their control of this market. And they've been very good at implementing their strategy, you know. Someone says, what's going to happen in China in 5 years' time? All you have to go and look is their five-year plan, because they publish a five-year plan every 5 years, and they implement it every 5 years. So they really know how to do that. And I think what's happened is that they took the strategic decision 30 years ago. They've implemented it very successfully, and now the West has fallen behind. And you can't rely on one supplier of these strategic permanent magnets. It does make good business sense. If you're a car manufacturer, you're Siemens, you make wind turbines, or you're another supplier of manufactured wind turbines, you're a car manufacturer. You know, if these elements or banned from being exported to the West, that's not good business practice, you know, for anyone, one manufacturing industry to rely on one supplier. So what the US and the West is doing, that's the European Union and so forth, they're trying to create an independent strategic supply chain outside of China. And this is a bipartisan initiative in the US government, which I'm very pleased about. And it's common amongst the EU countries as well. So we've seen recently a lot more focus on supporting the creation of the strategic supply chain outside of China.
Right.
As I say, not only is it important for defense, it's important for general manufacturing and so forth.
Yeah, my understanding is that's not just the US, that's like everybody.
Well, it's everybody, correct. As I said, you know, well, Australia doesn't have massive manufacturing, but certainly Europe does, you know, Canada has a certain amount, and the US, you know, and Japan and South Korea. So we're in strategic offtake discussions with potential Japanese, Korean, European offtakers, because they are starting to see the need to try and focus on signing up security of supply. And companies like Rainbow are very real in terms of, I know we're a real project, we are going to go into production. Unfortunately, unlike a lot of rare projects, which won't see the light of day, because rares are not that rare per se, but they're rare in economic quantities to be mined and processed economically. And that's the big advantage Rainbow has over most rare projects. We regard it as the highest margin rare project in development in the world today. Our forecast EBITDA margin on our initial feasibility study, and reinforced when we published an update in December last year, we between 70 and 75% EBITDA margin, which is unbelievable for any mining type project. Even though we're not a mining project, we're a chemical processing project. Because we're extracting the rare earths out of the phosphogypsum waste residue, we don't have all that mining cost. We don't have to crack. The rare earths are already cracked in that chemical stockpile in the phosphogypsum. And that means our unit costs are much, well, we've got much fewer units. Unit costs to cost to get to separated rare earth oxides, which is what MP Materials in America are starting to go downstream to separated rare earth oxides. We have the big Australian producer called Lynas. They go to separated rare earth oxides. And that's where Rainbow are going to be going through to separated rare earth oxides. But at a much lower cost than those other two large companies, because they have hard rock mining projects. They've got all the costs associated with hard rock mining, crushing, milling, you know, drill, blast, and then produce a rare earth concentrate. Then you crack your rare earth concentrate. Then you separate at Pernambuco, and then our project in Brazil with Uberaba in Brazil. Because of your production of phosphoric acid, you add sulfuric acid, you add heat. Those are two key ingredients. When you crack a mineral concentrated rare earth to a chemical form, you separate. That's already taken place for us in Uberaba, in Pernambuco. So, as I said, we've got fewer unit processes to have to build and spend capex on, and that means we've got lower capex, lower opex in the typical rare earth project.
What kind of if you can tell us about the friendliness of the jurisdiction, if you can tell us about the risk, maybe, or the challenges, do we see any risks for investors here? And if you can help us think through that.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be being honest with you all. This is, if I said there weren't strange relations between the US government and the South African government. But fortunately for our project in South Africa, it's not a mining project, so we don't have a government royalty, so we don't have any government administration, you know, associated with a project, and we don't have black economic empowerment in the project because it's not a mining project. It's a chemical processing project on a chemical brownfield site in South Africa. And basically, we tweeted this on our about 4 weeks ago on social media, and that you would have seen that a bipartisan US congressional delegation came to visit me in South Africa. It's the second time they've been to South Africa because they want an update on our rare earth project. It was Democrats, it was Republicans, it was the DFC. They were all part of this, and they want an update on Rainbow. And basically, the commitment by the US government is still very firmly in place for the Pernambuco project in South Africa. So You know, I'd like to tell your audience the proof's in the pudding. You saw 4 weeks ago the U.S. congressional delegation was down there giving support to the project, and we don't see that change again forward. But I've also de-risked Rainbow by also securing a project in Brazil, which is a very friendly jurisdiction. It's a similar project to Pinabol in the sense that we will be extracting rare earths out of this waste phosphogypsum residue, but the project's twice the size as Pinabol. You know, it will be processing twice the volume of phosphogypsum. We've signed an MOU with Mosaic. We're developing the project on a 50-50 basis, and we've had very good results so far. We're busy developing the flow sheet to go into our first feasibility stage on the project in Brazil. So we're very excited about what we see in Brazil. The thing about Brazil is that it's a long life project as well. It's got a life of over 40 years, whereas because it's a live phosphogypsum stack and they're currently producing phosphoric acid, and that production is forecast to go on for the next 40 years. Whereas in South Africa, our stack is a finite stack. It's only got 16-year life, but very high margin, as I mentioned, is going to produce, you know, enough rare earth elements to support 6,000 tons of magnet manufacturing in the U.S., which means that there will be able to be significant permanent magnet manufacturing in the U.S. with feedstock coming out of Pinabol. And then very shortly after that, we will use the cash flow from Pinabol to fund our portion of the project that we'll have to fund in Brazil with Mosaic. And basically, it will be twice the size of Pinabol's production. So, we'll be circa about the same size as Lynas in Australia when we complete our production volume out of Uberaba, coupled with what we have in Pinabol. So it makes us a significant producer. And the opportunity for investors is that currently our market cap, we're very undervalued. We're at $100 million, circa $100 million. And I see us building a multi-billion dollar business over the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, so a couple ways to go with this. You mentioned undervalue. Can you tell us a little bit about where you see yourself being valued, if I can ask that? And you also talked a bit about getting funding, backing from if you could tell us a bit about who's backing you and what you plan to do with the funds. I know that you mentioned some of your plans, but what's the plan here?
Yeah. So in terms of if we use conservative rare earth pricing, circa NdPr on its neodymium praseodymium at around about $100 a kilogram, currently, we're sitting at $60 a kilogram, but in 2022, it was sitting at $170, $180 a kilogram. So it's about a third of where it was 2 years ago, or now going on for 3 years. But so we're at the low point of the price cycle for rare earth elements. And all that is because China brought prices of these elements down because they wanted to prevent new rare earth projects coming on stream in the West. But if we look at conservative forecast rare earth pricing 2-3 years from now, when we will be in production, Rainbow will be making circa $200 million of EBITDA per annum. On a capital cost for our plant of circa $320 million. So $300 million of CapEx, $320 million maybe, to be producing, you know, as I said, you know, $190, $200 million of EBITDA. You can see why we're such a high margin project, very quick payback. If you look at rare earth pricing going into, you know, 2030 and beyond, on those forecasts for NdPr and dysprosium and terbium, this project will be producing circa $250-$300 million of EBITDA per annum. So that's the blue sky and rainbow. In terms of current pricing, as I said, we're looking to build our project circa $300-$320 million of CapEx. We know that the project can support about 2/3 of debt. So we're looking at about circa $200 million of debt. We need then $50 million of construction equity, and $50 million of that $100 million of construction equity has already been allocated to us by the DFC, in other words, the US government. So Rainbow will only be looking for about $50 million of construction equity when we go into construction at the end of next year. That's our forecast again construction end of next year. We are funded in terms of completing our definitive feasibility study or our bankable feasibility study till the end of this year. And we're fully funded to complete that bankable. And then next year, we're going to financing of the project through debt and eventually go into raising the balance of the equity that we required has not been supplied by the DFC.
George, if you can tell us a little bit about the team that you have around you, a little bit about yourself, what kind of resources, expertise, experience, and track record of success do you guys bring?
Okay, so it's a very good question. And I don't like talking about myself, but I suppose it's important to listen since being a junior miner. So I suppose one could say a fairly successful career as an investment banker. I was a partner in the second highest ranked corporate advisory stockbroking business in South Africa, which we sold to HSBC. So that was obviously a good trade. And we sold out in 1998 to HSBC. And I had a 3-year lock-in. So I hung around for 3 years. And then 2 years later, I resigned from HSBC Securities now in South Africa, where I was on the board for all those years. And because the corporate admin that came with a big corporate didn't suit my style. I'm an entrepreneur. So anyway. I then got into mining. I ended up being head of mining research sales and did some mining corporate finance. And I became CEO of private gold exploration business based in Tanzania, which had about 300,000 ounces in the ground. And I then took it in a year to 1 million ounces of gold in the ground and conferred an M&R. And I IPO'd that business in London. And it's got 2 operating gold mines today. So it's been a success. And as you know, 95% of all mining exploration development companies come to zero. So that was a success, I'm glad to say. And then out of doing that successfully, it was called Shanta Gold. Out of doing Shanta Gold successfully in London and on the ground in Tanzania, I got approached to help refinance a mining engineering business that had gone into liquidation. So I'm not an engineer, but I thought, oh, what the hell? You know, I did Shanta Gold successfully. I'm not a geologist. Let me have a go. So I refinanced with a partner, Indian Engineering, restarted it in 2006. And I listed it 2 years later in London. Paid a dividend every 6 months I was up here, which is a very successful track record. And I also built with my engineering team, designed and built 22 process plants and mines around the world and did about 35 odd feasibility studies in MDM engineering. My key technical director is a guy called Dave Dodd, who's the original D in MDM. He, in his career, has designed and built over 80 process plants and mines around the world. And all those 80, 22 were with me in the resurrected business. He's also done over 100 feasibility studies in his career. So when I got involved in Rainbow, the first thing I did was I phoned Dave, who'd retired after us. I then sold MDM Engineering in 2014 to a global engineering business called Amick Foster Wheeler. You may have heard of. But Amick Foster Wheeler was a global engineering business listed in the US, listed in London, and I sold out to them in late 2014, 10 years ago. Once again, I saw my project pipeline that I'd sold. I delivered that to the company for 3 years and then I resigned. And then I looked for something to do and I got involved in Rainbow Rares. First thing I did was find Dave Dodd and say, Dave, I need you in this business. Dave came out of retirement and he said, George, of course I'll help you. And then with Dave's technical expertise, I also employed a guy called Chris LaRue. Chris was the chief metallurgist at Gold Fields, one of the top 4 gold producers in the world. I did a lot of work for Gold Fields as MDM engineering. And Chris came to join me at MDM out of Gold Fields. And while we were at MDM together, we did 2 bankable feasibility studies on rare earth projects, one being the Namibian rare earth project called Loftal, and another rare earth project in Tanzania called Peak Resources, which just yesterday was announced, it was bought out by a Chinese company called Chengdu, one of the biggest rare earth companies in China. They bought the Peak Resources project in Tanzania 100%. But my team at Rainbow, we did both feasibility studies for Peak as well as for Loftal Rare Earths in Namibia. And thirdly, employed a young guy called Drew Vildenboe, very, very clever process engineer, chemical engineer from a company called DRA, the global engineering business. And he was a lead process engineer on the development of the Makanga Road project in Malawi. So I've got all this rare earth experience within Rainbow. As a team, we've designed and built two uranium plants. We've done numerous uranium feasibility studies. I was building the Energia, the Berkeley Energia uranium project in Spain, where I sold MDM to Amic Foster Wheeler. And so we've got a lot of experience in working in sulfuric acid environments, materials of construction for these type of plants. And as I said, using some of the processes like continuous ion exchange that you use in uranium plants, we are employing at Rainbow. So all that experience, I think we're bringing to bear very successfully in what we're achieving at Rainbow. So we know how to develop flow sheets, we know how to cost flow sheets, and we know how to build and deliver process plants. And this is a chemical process plant that we deliver here for Rainbow.
A lot of check boxes there, George. If you can tell us a bit about your share structure, how many shares outstanding, how many shares are owned by insiders, institutions?
So we've got about total number of shares and issues, about 641 million shares. And so our market cap circa on 90 to 100 million US at the moment. The chairman and myself own about 20, just over 20% of the company. Other board members and insiders own about another 40, take us to about 40% of the company. So about 40% owned by management and insiders. And the balance is in public hands amongst institutions and private and retail investors. Yeah.
Where are you trading? And if you can share with us your ticker and your contact information in case someone has any questions on how to reach you.
Sure. So the ticker is RBW, trading on the London Stock Exchange. We're also trading the pink sheets in the US market, but very small volume. We listed on the main board in London. And as I said, which was the other part of your question? Sorry, Steve?
How do people, what's your website and your either email or way to contact you?
Yeah, so www.rainbowrares.com is the website. I can be contacted on George B for Bennett, GeorgeB@rainbowrares.com. And I'm happy to receive direct emails from potential investors or answer any questions they may have. If the question is too technical, I can put them onto my technical team. But if it's more general, you know, I can basically answer most of those questions for your investor base.
Excellent. Well, full disclosure, Rainbow Rare Earths did not pay for this interview. I am not an investor personally yet, but that may be changing soon as I am excited about your project and continuing. I'd love to continue to learn about your story and follow you. So thanks so much for coming on our show and thank you for your time. Enjoyed it.
No, I appreciate that. If you look at some of the recent junior mining rare earth companies listed in the New York market, you'll see why Rainbow's undervalued. We are, you can say quite arrogantly, we are a far better rare earth project in terms of our margin. It's been independently verified in terms of our capital intensity, yet our market cap's only $100 million. So I believe there's massive upside for people who have faith in the Rainbow team. And as I said, we are not a single project company. We diversified our risk, but geographically as well as project wise. So yeah, I think we're a very good bet for your listeners.
Awesome. Well, George, thank you so much for your time. Enjoy it.
Pleasure. Thank you, Steve. Thank you for listening.